standing position 1 year. The next year, the individual who had been the person above me moved up one. I moved up one. We had a new fireman. I'm now the oiler. The next year, new fireman, new oiler, new engineer.
Did you particularly enjoy these watches? I mean,
they're very boring. But it was, you know, that's what you did. If you didn't do that, you didn't get to where you were going.
All right.
Now, in your situation as an international relations global studies major, you stood watches, but what did you do when you were on watch on the bridge?
Really, they don't have us do watches, and this is where things tend to get pretty different. I mean, we will perform a watch while out on the ship.
Yeah.
And so, me and another business or global major, we will be with the deckies.
Uh-huh.
And they will show us, okay, this is what we do, and they'll actually let us steer the ship for a few minutes. Like, now imagine just doing that for 4 hours.
Yeah, it's very boring.
Yeah, and I'm just like, yeah, I don't think I could stand here for 4 hours. I'd probably fall asleep at the wheel. And then they're showing us how to map everything. It's like, okay, last known position.
Right.
And saying, yes, like, okay, yeah. So it's like, during the hours of night, you have to be very quiet because the captain is nearby.
And
don't want to piss him off. And the room is kept constantly dark, so everyone's eyes can be adjusted.
Right.
Then we're doing walks around the ship, you know, doing the security runs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, so you guys have the basic idea. Go on. You're free. I still got to do this for another couple of hours.
So you were an observer, essentially.
But we still performed the watch.
Sure.
Then when it came to the engine watch, honestly, those guys, they don't care for us there. They don't want us down there because I mean I'm
friends.
They've
got things to do.
Exactly. I'm friends with enough of them. It's like yeah. If you show up, great. If not, we won't care.
We'll miss you.
Because it's like yeah, we won't care. We prefer you to stay out of our way.
Right.
Hey, that works for me.
Right.
So it's like the watches are still performed, but with regards to us, yeah, like you said, we are pretty much observers and see what they do. So deckies don't mind us all too much because it's just like, oh yeah, show you this, do that, free. Engineers who are down in a godforsaken hellhole, I mean literally because it's so hot down there.
Right.
They're just like, please, stay out of our way. I mean, we don't mind, but really all we'll have you do is just push a button.
Right.
And then tell you to leave.
Right. So. But you did have to get up at 3:30 to be down there at 3:45.
Yeah, they've had us get out there. It's like either your early morning or your like the 8 to midnight watch.
So
it's like because during the day we still had things going on.
Right.
We had either classes going on or we were doing day work and clean sweep.
Right.
Now, did they have clean work and day work and clean sweep when you were doing your cruises?
Well, yeah, you had to maintain your quarters, and you had to maintain the public spaces. But yeah, there was regular maintenance of decks and bulkheads and that sort of thing. And as you suggested, we had to chip and paint.
Yeah, just basically go back to the same area. It's like paint the wall, come back, chip the paint.
Right.
Apply another layer.
Right.
Yeah.
Rust never sleeps.
No. And apparently just, you can never fix it. I mean, no matter how many layers of primer we put on, always manage to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because of how, the way the school's expanded, not just facility-wise, but number of students, when we were out on cruise, we had, because there were so many people on the ship, we were broken up into work groups, like Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, and Delta.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, when it was, the school had about how many people? You said like maybe 250?
Just half of that.
Half of that.
125.
Okay, so school at your time had 125 people.
Yeah.
And now take that 125 people, and that is if they still stuck around and didn't leave within the first half of the year. When they went on cruise, how did the work schedule like that work? I mean, were you guys still broken up into groups, or was everyone just one working group and you performed your day work and clean sweep duties?
Well, you were a watch standing group, you were an individual group. For instance, if you were in the engineering space and you're standing in engineering watch, there would be the same four people every time we had a watch. If we were on the 4 to 8, those four would go down to the engine room for 4 hours, and then they'd be off radar, and they go back to the engine room for 4 hours. It's just very much similar to what they would do when they got into the merchant service.
Okay. How often did you guys perform evacuation drills?
Very irregularly.
Very regularly?
Well, we had the opportunity to have, they had man overboard drills, and there was at least one occasion where we put a large number of the students in lifeboats, put them over the side, and then left them, and the ship sailed over the horizon.
Really? And then
that gave you
just
a very high awareness of what it would be like if you were in a lifeboat in the middle of the ocean, because there's nothing that you can see except water for miles.
Well, that's a very hands-on approach with the matter.
Yeah. And each one of these lifeboats had a little radar for reflector, so they could find us.
Okay. When you did the man overboard drills, did you have a little dummy you just threw out there?
Or, yeah.
Or did you find some unsuspecting student and have him volunteer?
No, they had a dummy. You know, I'm not even sure that we did man overboard drills. We may have, or maybe have simulated them. Essentially, what the man overboard drill gives you the opportunity to do is to exercise this. I think it's it has a name for this turn that they do. They have to turn the ship and do it in such a way they come back.
Right, oh, it's like a figure eight turn?
Something where you come back to the spot where you think the person went overboard.
Okay. Yeah. And did anyone ever somehow utter those words, man overboard? The reason I ask is because on the cruise we were on, this one guy actually did, and he sent the ship into a frenzy, and it was like around the hours of midnight.
Yeah.
And so it's like the captain and all these guys who make this decision were like this close to giving the green light and waking up cadets to launch a rescue boat for someone that wasn't out there.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, were there ever times where it looked like there was someone, but you double-checked and saw, okay, that was like probably just some weird thing floating in the water?
No.
Nothing like that?
No.
Okay. Well, you guys were lucky.
Yeah, that would be... some suggestion is made that in many of these vocations, you have hours of boredom and just a few minutes of extreme stress. So I think that might be similar. The ship will go from here to there, and there will be no problems unless there's a problem, and then you have to be prepared to deal with it.
Okay. How many times did they leave you behind in the lifeboats?
I think we did as I remember, only on one cruise. In other words, we were set out, and then they came back and got us after a while.
Yeah.
I think we put up sails, and...
How long would they leave you guys out there?
Oh, half an hour, something like that. Long enough to get the feeling of being alone in the ocean.
And, like I was saying, like, how many times did they do this to you? I mean, did they do it, like, once or twice?
Once, at least once on that particular cruise. They may have done it more than that. I think there might have even been a photo of it in the annual. So, you know, I mentioned earlier that Harry McCullough in the Equator Crossing, here's Harry.
Oh, that guy?
Getting his chest shaved. But I think somewhere in here there's a photo of the lifeboats out there taken from one of the lifeboats.
And when you graduated from here, what were some of the ships that you had actually served on?
Oh, I graduated in 1956, went the Navy through 1958, and I have not been assigned to a ship since. I never shipped merchant. I went to work selling machinery in 1958 and did it for 50 years.
And what company was that with?
Well, the company is currently part of General Electric, interestingly enough, but when I went to work for it, it was a division of Dresser Industries, and Dresser was eventually merged into Dresser Rand, and Dresser Rand then was acquired by General Electric.
Okay. And were these the people you got your first job with when you graduated?
Yeah. In 1958, I was aboard the USS Yorktown, which is a very large, complete ecosystem, which had 1,500 souls aboard, and no lifeboats.
No
when
lifeboats.
You think about it, the men of war, the U.S. Navy's commanding fleet, they don't have any lifeboats. They have life rafts and they have inflatables, but they have no lifeboats, which I suppose is not a cruise ship. But anyway, 1,500 people. We had a print shop, we had a photography shop, and all the things that you would have in a large enterprise like that. So I used the print shop and the photography shop to come up with a one-page letter introducing myself, asking for an opportunity to apply for work. I think I sent out 112 of those, and of course I got those responses. Then I sent out of them 65 asked for me to send an application for employment. So I did that, and then from that I had 13 job offers and took the one that paid the most money.
And what was the salary at that time?
$425 a month. Now multiplied everything by 10, or a little bit more than 10 these days, but 10's an easy number to use.
Yeah, and that's actually a pretty good starting pay for that time.
Yeah, I think we were well paid. One of the reasons that you can one of the ways that you can get a higher salary is to go into sales, because most people are afraid of selling. They're afraid of rejection, which is not a typical problem. Most people that you call on do not reject you. They are pleased they have the opportunity to perhaps learn something. So the salaries were higher in sales than they were in other fields.
And what was it you were selling?
Salary at that time?
No, yeah. What was it you were selling at the time?
Capital equipment, rotating equipment, air compressors, vacuum pumps, and that sort of thing.
Okay, and were these just like generally applied items, or like were there just like a specific market for? I mean, was these things like the school could have probably bought for stuff around here?
The school has equipment that I didn't sell to it, but they have equipment that was acquired from that company. The particular products that we sold had a lot more general application. We weren't specifically in the oil field industry or the paper making industry, but we were in the oil field industry and in the paper, but not exclusively. So we were across the line. You could find our products in breweries or yeast manufacturing or grain handling, all sorts of different things.
And would you say any of the stuff you took with you and did with your sales, you can contribute that to, well, your teachers? I mean, was there anything that like the teachers did with you guys that you can say really stuck with you? Not just, you know, showing you how to take things apart and put them back together, but outside of the class, I mean, how did faculty normally interact with students so that way they could take more with them than just what was in the classroom? I mean, was there much interaction between the students and the faculty?
Well, sure, because you had the faculty, you had them in the morning for the academic acts, and then you had them in the afternoon for the practical. So you were with faculty for the full day.
But I'm talking about, like, not just in classrooms or anything like that. I'm talking, like, afterwards. I mean, like, were there the times where you guys were able to actually get off campus, was there any times you actually somehow bumped into a faculty member and pretty much just shot the breeze with them?
Yeah, we had one fellow who was younger and was willing to spend that time. His name was Bill Emery, and he had been out of school maybe 3 or 4 years. So he came back, and he was very articulate, very intelligent, and we did spend some time with him ashore. But by and large, we did not interrelate with the faculty off campus.
Because they just didn't want to, or you felt like you'd seen them enough in a day?
I guess we had no common interest. I mean, they were somewhat older, and we were somewhat younger. And one of the things that has changed immensely over time is that, whereas in 1953, the entering class were pretty much 18-year-old men just graduated from high school. Today, you have a broad diversity of ages and gender, different, larger number of majors. In 1953 or 1956, there were only two majors.
Engineering and the deckies.
The third assistant engineer track and the third mate track, and that was it. I understand today 65% of the student body is still on the license track, mm-hmm. but 35% is mechanical engineering, facilities engineering, the global studies, and international logistics, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. That's probably the growth area for the school over time. I think the school will also always have the license track, but the potential for growth outside the license track is immense. What do you need to graduate a student in your discipline? You need a desk, a chair, a multiple of desks and chairs, mm-hmm. and some sort of audiovisual, and a professor.
Yep.
Whereas a license track, you've got to have all this laboratories. So it's expensive. It's extremely expensive. If you look at the budget for the CSU system, $4.5 billion, $4.5 billion for 450,000 students. That's a CSU system, 23 campuses. $4.5 billion, 450,000 students. Well, you divide 450,000 into, oh no, I'll take it a little differently. If you look at that $4.5 billion budget and look at the increment for CMA, for Cal Maritime, Cal Maritime is 20 million out of $4.5 billion, roughly 0.02%. Not 0.2, not 2, but 0.02%. So we're spending 0.02%. No, I'm sorry, it's 0.05%. Someone should have caught that. At any rate, 0.02% will not get you 20 million.
No,
that would get you 9 million. But at any rate, it's 0.05%.
Yeah, but luckily, because of still how small this campus is, we're not getting as much with like budget cuts or anything like that. And because of how the campus was back then, I mean, it being so small, and granted, this was not in the CSU system, how were the finances back then?
Terrible. They had practically no money. One of the advantages of going under the CSU system is that we've increased the amount of money that the state spends here. But I was going along the road of, turns out to be 0.05, I'm sorry, 0.02% of the student body for CSU. 0.02% of 450,000 is around 900. Mm-hmm. So we're roughly in that area. So let's identify that 0.02% of the CSU student body is here. But 0.05% of the budget is here. So if you take 0.05% of $4.5 billion, you come up with roughly $20 million. So we're almost twice as much per student per year. And I think we can get away with it because we're so small.
Yeah. But nonetheless, you're saying because the school's actually gone to the CSU system, that it's actually helped in terms with the school's growth and development.
Yeah, prior to becoming part of the CSU system, which was accomplished by Mary Lyons, who's now the president of University of San Diego, we were able to get under the CSU system. Prior to that time, it was a line item on the governor's budget. And when Reagan was the governor of California, he just crossed it out, closed it down.
Really?
Yep. Send them to Sonoma State. Let them go to someplace else. Because it's so small, who cares? Luckily, people in the industry were able to talk to the political people and get him to
change his
reverse
mind.
That. Yeah. So at that time, it was probably $2 million a year. Now it's $20 million a year. But it's only $20 million out of $4.5 billion. So I think that, and plus the school has demonstrated the ability to place people in very productive jobs, which mm-hmm. I think the state gets their money back just in income tax. The state income tax is much higher on graduates of Cal Maritime than on the average CSU graduate. Most CSU graduates do not make the salary level that Cal Maritime graduates achieve.
Okay, and so you're saying even beforehand, but nonetheless, like coming here to California Maritime Academy, it will pay off in the end, and you actually get a line of benefits from it.
Well, the state of California is spending a lot of money, but from the standpoint of the individual, it costs about $80,000 to graduate Cal Maritime, about $20,000 a year, just a rough round number. Now, there may be some factors that can reduce that cost, but it's about $20,000 a year, tuition, room, and board. So $80,000 to graduate a productive member of society. How long does it take to get that $80,000 back at, if the average income is, let's say, 60 grand a year?
Well, no, I'm not in the whole finances and business sector. So, I just want to get into the security field. Well, Mr. Bryant, it was good talking with you. I mean, thank you for telling us so much. I mean, I actually was
pretty... We've used up our time.
Pretty much, but... But yeah, I mean, I think we've covered a lot of bases. On
good.
This, so thank you for coming
thank
out
you.
Again.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
So how many of those will you do today?